Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take complex topics, boil them down, and give you those key insights fast.
Right. We aim for those aha moments without you needing to wade through tons of material.
And today, we're doing this for you, the learner. You like getting up to speed quickly, understanding the core ideas?
Exactly. And today's topic is, well, it's pretty deep in the world of mathematics. It helps understand randomness.
Okay, let's dive in. We're tackling a research paper on the Parabolic Anderson Model, PM for short.
Right, PM. And no, it's not about cooking spray.
No. It's a mathematical tool, right?
Right.
For modeling how things, maybe like heat or a population, spread out in environments that are messy.
Yeah.
Random.
That's a good way to put it. Messy, unpredictable environments. Think about maybe how a contaminant spreads in groundwater with varying soil densities.
Okay.
The model includes this randomness explicitly. It uses something called space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise sounds intense, like random jolts happening everywhere all the time. Yeah.
Pretty much. That's the idea. It's the mathematical way of capturing that unpredictable influence.
Now, what makes this particular study interesting is the starting point. They call it a delta initial condition.
Yes. And that's crucial.
So instead of starting spread out, it's like everything begins at one single infinitesimally small point.
Exactly. Imagine dropping a single speck of fluorescent dye right at the center of a huge tank of water. That super concentrated start is the delta condition.
Okay, I can picture that. And our source for this?
We're drawing from excerpts of a paper. It's from the Journal of Functional Analysis 2022. The title is Spatial Ergodicity and Central Limit Theorems for Parabolic Anderson Model with Delta Initial Condition.
Quite a title.
And the authors?
Chen, Kushnevisan, Nualart, and Pu. These are really big names in probability and stochastic analysis.
Got it. So our mission today is to unpack their main findings. What happens to this PAM system starting from that single point over the long term? Right, we want to understand its spatial behavior. That's the ergodicity part, and its statistical fluctuations, which relates to the central limit theorems. Does it average out? Does it follow a bell curve?
Sounds like a plan. Ready to get into the model itself?
Let's do it. So the basic equation looks like this. EPU chyle is equals 12 euro by 2U plus ki.
Okay, let's break that down. ETU is how U changes over time.
Correct. EUTX is our quantity of interest, AD temperature, maybe concentration at time T and position X.
And the 12 euro 2Q, that looks like the heat equation, standard diffusion.
Exactly. That describes the natural tendency to spread out smoothly, like heat dissipating.
But then there's the plus key term. That's the weird part.
That's the PAM part. That's where the random environment, the space-time white noise, interacts with the quantity itself. It multiplies the randomness.
So the randomness isn't just added on. It actually scales with how much U is already there. Interesting.
It is. Now, solving this directly is tough. So researchers often use what's called the mild form or integral equation form. It involves the heat kernel, often written as PTX. Think of that as the fundamental solution for how a point source of heat spreads.
Right, that Gaussian bell shape getting wider over time.
Exactly. The mild form looks like UTX equals PTX plus an integral term.
So PTX is like the initial delta point spreading out on its own.
As if there were no noise, yes. And the integral term adds up all the effects of the noise interacting with the solution at earlier times and different locations, propagated forward by the heat kernel.
Wow, okay. That captures the whole history of the noise influencing the present state.
Precisely. Now, to study the long-term effects, especially the statistics, they look at a renormalized solution. They define UTX, UTX, PTX.
Ah, so they're dividing out that basic heat spread, PTX. Why do that?
It helps isolate the impact of the noise. By removing the dominant deterministic spreading part, you can see the fluctuations driven purely by the randomness more clearly. It's like adjusting for inflation to see the real economic growth.
Makes sense. You're getting rid of the baseline to see the interesting variations.
Exactly. And they set the initial condition for this U as U0 x equals 1.
Okay.
There's also an equivalent equation just for U, which looks a bit different but captures the same dynamics. It involves an integral with the noise again, but scaled differently.
So this UTX is the main object they study for the long-term behavior.
Yes. And a key property is that for any fixed time TOO, this UTX process becomes statistically stationary in space.
Stationary in space, meaning its statistical properties, like its average or variance, are the same no matter where you look along the x-axis.
That's right. The random pattern looks statistically the same everywhere at a given snapshot in time. Like a long piece of fabric with a consistent random weave.
Okay, that spatial stationarity must be important for talking about averages over large distances.
It is. It paves the way for the first major result, spatial ergodicity.
Ergodicity, we hear that term a lot. What does it mean specifically here?
Here, spatial ergodicity means if you take the average value of UTX over a very, very large spatial interval, say from 0 to n.
So you average u across a huge chunk of space.
Then as that interval length n goes to infinity, the average value converges to a specific number.
And what number is that?
It converges to 1.
To 1, which was the initial value of u.
Exactly. So despite all the random fluctuations driven by the noise, if you average over a large enough space, the system remembers that initial normalized state, in a sense.
So the spatial average washes out the local randomness and settles on the expected value.
Precisely. The paper proves this rigorously. Theorem 1.1 states that UT is weakly mixing, which implies this ergodicity. So lim ns UEX dx equals 1.
And this happens almost surely, meaning with probability 1.
Almost surely, and also in L1, meaning the average absolute difference goes to 0. And they even show later it converges in LK for any K, which is a stronger convergence.
Okay, so spatially, things average out predictably in the long run. But what about the fluctuations around that average of 1? How big are they? Do they follow any pattern?
Excellent question. That brings us to the central limit theorems, or CLTs. They define a quantity SNT, which is basically the spatial average of UT X1, over the interval 0n.
So SNT measures the deviation or the error of the spatial average from 1.
Exactly. It captures the fluctuation over a finite region of size n. Theorem 1.2 is a quantitative CLT for this SNT.
Quantitative meaning it gives a rate of convergence.
Yes. It tells us how fast the distribution of a properly scaled SNT approaches a standard normal distribution, that classic bell curve.
And how fast is it?
The distance between the distribution of scaled SNT and the normal distribution is bounded by something proportional to log nn.
Ah, log nn again. That logarithm. That's unusual, isn't it? Usually for CLTs, you expect just one n.
It is unusual, and it's a really key finding of this paper, directly linked to the delta initial condition. We'll come back to why that log n pops up.
Okay, so the convergence is a bit slow. What about the scaling? How do they scale SNT?
They need to understand its variance first. Proposition 4.1 shows that the variance of SNT behaves like 2t log n, n for large n.
There's that log n again. So the variance itself grows logarithmically with n, but it's also divided by n.
Right. It's a delicate balance. Because the variance behaves like log n, n, the correct scaling factor for the CLT turns out to be n log n.
Wow. Okay. That's definitely not the standard sense scaling.
Not at all. So the result is that n the log n, SNT, converges in distribution to a normal random variable with mean 0 and variance 2t.
So despite the weird scaling, we still recover that fundamental Gaussian bell curve behavior for the spatial fluctuations when averaged appropriately.
Yes, the universality of the normal distribution holds, but the path to get there, the scaling, reflects the singular nature of the starting point.
Fascinating. And there's another CLT, Theorem 1.3.
Yes, a functional CLT. This one looks at SN not just at a single time t, but as a process evolving over time.
So how the spatial fluctuations themselves change over time.
Exactly. It says that the entire process, SNA, viewed as a random function of time, converges weakly in the space of continuous functions.
Converges to what?
It converges to sut, TB, where B is a standard one-dimensional Brownian motion.
Brownian motion, the classic random walk. So the time evolution of these scaled spatial averages looks like a random jiggle.
That's the idea. The fluctuations over time, suitably scaled, behave like the most fundamental continuous random process.
But you mentioned there was an open question here.
Right. They proved weak convergence, which is standard for functional CLTs. But they raised the question of whether this convergence might hold in a stronger sense, specifically in total variation distance. That remains open.
Always more questions to answer in math. Now, let's circle back to that delta initial condition. You said it causes technical challenges and leads to these unusual log n factors.
Yes, it really complicates things compared to, say, starting with u0, x equals 1 everywhere, a flat initial condition.
How so?
One key issue is the behavior of the Malleven derivative of the solution.
Okay, Malleven derivative. That's a tool from stochastic calculus. What does it measure, roughly?
Very roughly, it measures how sensitive the solution, UTX, is to tiny changes in the underlying noise. It's related to variance and dependence.
And it behaves differently here.
Significantly differently. The singularity at the start changes the structure of these derivatives. This difference impacts tools used to estimate variance, like the Poincaré inequality.
And that leads to the slower convergence.
Exactly. The Poincaré inequality they derive yields that slower decay rate involving log nn, whereas for the flat initial condition, you typically get a faster 1n rate.
So that log n is a direct fingerprint of the initial singularity affecting the system's variability over large scale.
Absolutely. And that slower decay invariance necessitates the unconventional mth log n scaling in the CLTs. The authors stress that these logarithmic factors are really characteristic of this specific problem setting.
What does it tell us intuitively? Why the log n? Does it mean correlations decay more slowly?
That's the intuition. The system seems to have longer-range spatial correlations, or decorrelates more slowly, because of that initial point source. The influence of that single starting point persists more strongly across space than if it had started spread out.
Like, the memory of that initial pinprick lasts longer and affects distant points more than you'd expect.
That's a great way to think about it. The singularity creates a kind of long-term memory in the spatial structure of the fluctuations.
And technically, proving these results required some heavy machinery.
Yes. For the quantitative CLT, Theorem 1.2, they employed the Malevin-Stein method, which is a powerful technique for getting bounds on the distance to a normal distribution.
Okay.
And for the functional CLT, Theorem 1.3, proving the tightness part, ensuring the random functions don't fluctuate too wildly to converge, was apparently more intricate because of the singularity.
So definitely not a straightforward application of standard theorems. They had to navigate the specific challenges posed by the delta start.
Correct. It pushed the existing techniques and required careful analysis adapted to this singular case.
All right, let's try to wrap this up. What are the main takeaways from this deep dive?
Okay, so this paper studies the parabolic Anderson model, which describes diffusion in a random environment, but specifically when it starts from a single point, the delta initial condition.
And they found that, first, if you average the solution, properly renormalized, over large spatial regions, it converges to a predictable value. One, that's spatial ergodicity.
Right. And second, the fluctuations around this average, when scaled correctly, follow a normal distribution, the classic bell curve, that's the CLT.
But the key twist is in the details of that convergence. The rate involves a log n factor, and the scaling needed for the CLT is an unusual n log n.
Exactly. And these logarithmic factors are the signature of the delta initial condition, indicating slower decorrelation or a longer memory of that singular start compared to smoother initial states.
So for you, the learner, the insight is really about how much the very beginning, that initial setup, can influence the long-term statistical behavior of a complex random system in surprising ways.
Precisely. It shows that even in systems dominated by randomness, the initial configuration can leave a lasting, measurable imprint on the large-scale statistics.
It really drives home that initial conditions matter, even when randomness seems like it would wash everything out eventually. It makes you think.
What's that?
Well, they studied a single point start. What if you started from, say, a line, or maybe 2 points? How would different kinds of singularities change these results?
That's a fantastic question. People do study PAM with other singular initial measures, like starting on a line or fractal set, and the behavior can indeed be different.
And are there real-world things that start highly localized like this, where these kinds of models might apply, maybe like the start of an epidemic or mutation?
Potentially, yes. Any phenomenon involving growth or spread in a random medium that originates from a very small region could, in principle, share some characteristics with these models. It's an active area connecting the math to potential applications. Definitely food for thought.
It really is. This was fascinating, getting a glimpse into how mathematicians tackle these complex random systems.
Glad we could dive into it.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring.